data has always vexed the nonprofit sector in some ways. We know that progress often hinges on it, but challenges around standardization and security, access, transparency, they always seem to get in the way. Right now, the nonprofit sector is facing this really important moment. AI is completely changing how we understand and how we utilize data, while nonprofits are navigating a whole new funding and legal landscape. I think it's critical for the whole sector to come together to chart a clear and cohesive and more equitable way forward. Luckily, we have organizations like Candid leading the way. Welcome to Impact Audio. I'm Sam Kaplan, Vice President of Social Impact at Submittable. Today I sit down with Anne Mae Chang, CEO of Candid. She digs into how the organization is creating data infrastructure for nonprofits and helping shed some of the old models that have held the sector back. Anne Mae Chang, this has been such a long time coming. I'm super excited to have you finally as a guest here on Impact Audio. So welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Sam. It's great to have one of our really fun conversations be recorded.
I know. People don't know. We get together pretty regularly and we trade insights and ideas on the nonprofit sector and grant making and data and all the fun topics out there. So we're going to do our best just to make this one of those conversations.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. All right. Well, and as soon as I say that, I realize I have to ask you about you. So even though I think I already know the answers, tell me a little bit about your background, Anne Mae. So I know that you have this sort of rich history working in the tech sector and you moved to Candid 4 years ago, I think now. So catch us up a little bit on you.
Thank you. I've done a little bit of everything. I studied as a software engineer, worked in the tech industry for over 20 years in different roles in management that included places like Apple and Google and Intuit, as well as some startups. But then I made a long planned pivot to work to do something more meaningful. I started out actually in government, so went from Google to the State Department worked in government both at the State Department and at USAID, really looking at global development and trying to figure out a path for how could I take the skills I had from the tech sector and bring it to doing good in the world. That led me to write a book called Lean Impact that really tried to capture how do we harness these best practices for innovation in the that we've learned in Silicon Valley, but apply them to doing more good in the world. And since then I've worked with a number of different nonprofits and have been at Candid now for just over 4 years. So I think of myself as a tri-sector athlete, where I've been in the public, private, and social sectors. And I think it's the few of us who've done that, I feel like it's such a precious opportunity to really understand how these pieces of the puzzle can fit together and really work together to drive the kind of change that we need in the world.
So how do they fit together? Are there any similarities between those three sectors?
There are similarities and there's also differences, of course. I think each sector brings its unique strengths and its unique limitations, right? The private sector is probably the fastest moving, has the best talent, and is, can be really focused on driving results. But it doesn't necessarily always have a soul, right? Those results are often in the service of making more money for people who already have a lot of money. And so it can go awry. On the other hand, the government is really in service of people, in service of voters and the people in the country. And it has the real benefit of being able to do things at massive scale, to drive policy change, systems change, to really solve problems at a scale no one else can solve. On the downside, though, government moves pretty slowly. It's hard to drive change in the government. And it can also be a little bit removed from, people in local communities. And so that's where I think nonprofits come in, that nonprofits and the social sector in general, I think, is fills in the cracks between where there are market failures on the private sector side and where there's policy failures on the government side, where the social sector really is able to fill in those gaps and has more, is closer to communities, understands those issues better, and is able to test out different models across the country to figure out what might work and hopefully scale those things over time, either through markets or through government or policy change. So I think the three all play essential roles, and I think magic happens at the intersection.
Yeah, I think you're getting it right. Like, we often talk about philanthropy in terms of it being like risk capital and a place for experimentation. And then to your point, we hope that either the corporate sector or the government will take some of the best solutions that are uncovered in nonprofit and scale those. I think there have been some really interesting examples out there. Like Gates Foundation has had some pretty amazing success in terms of investing in various like healthcare innovation and then seeing that get scaled, whether it's been on the corporate side or the government side out there. Like, do you feel like that's the right model? And do you think it actually works? Like, are we seeing government pick up some of these great ideas that come out of the nonprofit sector, or are we seeing corporate America pick up some of these great ideas?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we see both of those things happening in many different forms, sometimes small and sometimes large, right? So, yeah, I do see both, experiments that are run in the nonprofit sector find a business model and then get picked up by the corporate sector where they're able to reach deeper into markets and serve communities that they might not have served otherwise, as well as the government sort of being able to modify its policy based on, for example, experiments that nonprofits had did around, like, what are best ways to help the homeless, right? And the government is able to step in and change policy in terms of how we stepped in.
I don't know if you see this, Anne May. I see a lot of it in all of the like conferences I go to and on LinkedIn and other places where people from the nonprofit sector are gathering to trade ideas. And it seems like there's always this idea, especially around artificial intelligence, like that's the tech du jour. So people are talking about it a lot, that like the nonprofit sector itself ought to be more responsible for building the technology and the solutions and the innovation that we as a sector are using to do our work, rather than relying on the corporate sector to like develop these tools or provide these innovations for us. Like, do you have any thoughts on like, is that one? I'm just wondering, like, do you agree? And two, like, even if we do agree with that, do you think it's plausible that the nonprofit sector can, provide this innovation rather than partnering with corporations and others?
That's a really interesting one. I'm at my heart, like, very much like trisector,
Yeah.
right? I think we all need to play a role there. So I don't think that the nonprofit sector should or would benefit from working independently of the for-profit sector. But I think that it can leverage the work that is done there and really harness it for good. The challenge of having the nonprofit sector try to drive these things ourselves is that the tech sector is literally plowing hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars into innovation. And they are paying people millions and millions of dollars, top talent, to drive these things. And they're buying, like, boatloads of data centers and things. The nonprofit sector can't possibly keep up with that. And I don't think it's, I think us trying to do it at a smaller scale, we're just never going to be at the cutting edge in that way. So I do think we need to leverage some of the progress that's made there. We also need to be a voice as these new technologies are being developed for making sure that there are safeguards so that the technologies benefit and not harm our communities. So those are roles that I think the nonprofit sector should absolutely play in terms of partnering with the tech sector. And I think that we should harness the advances that are developed for good. And that piece of it, I think, is unique to the nonprofit sector because it's never going to be as high a priority for the for-profit sector.
Yeah. And so I want to pivot just a little, and I'd love you to tell us all about Candid and your time there and sort of Candid's mission. I'm also really curious, like based on what you were just saying, like can Candid potentially be a voice or a partner for the for-profit sector in terms of helping shape some of these innovations and technologies, especially around data?
Yeah, and I think we already are. So just to maybe take a step back and share a little bit about Candid for folks who are listening who may not be familiar. Candid is a nonprofit. We were formed a little over 6 years ago through the merger of two longstanding nonprofits, GuideStar and Foundation Center, who are pillars of the sector, if you will. And together we have the most comprehensive data about the social sector. So that means data about nonprofits and their work, as well as foundations and their giving. So we're able to now paint this 360 view of what's happening across the social sector. So some of the ways people know us are through our profiles. We have LinkedIn-like profiles that over 100,000 nonprofits have shared the information about their organizations with us, being able to tell their own stories so that they can be found by funders. We are have funders who come to Candid to be able to research and vet nonprofits. And our raw data is used by over 100 other platforms who are, some of the biggest donor-advised funds, donation platforms, and otherwise leverage our data. So when people share their data with Candid, it goes beyond just our products and to everywhere else. And so our mission at its heart is really about getting people the information they need to do good. And we really believe that fundamentally transparency and good data will help both nonprofits and funders drive better decision making and achieve greater impact.
Yeah, and certainly Submittable is a big fan and big user of Candid data as well. So, one of my favorite initiatives that has come out of Candid during your tenure has been, the Data 1x or Data One Time initiative. And I think the idea behind that is that nonprofit organizations, especially those who are applying for funding, we ask them to, in every single grant application to provide the same data over and over and over again. And it causes a tremendous amount of burden and it costs a lot of time and money and energy for them to constantly have to re-enter that same data. So the idea there was people at nonprofits can enter, create a profile on Candid, and then all of us, grant management platforms and impact measurement platforms, we can just tap into that data at Candid and reuse it, right? And be assured that we're always getting the freshest data from nonprofits, and we save them a lot of time and energy and heartache from having to constantly tell their story the exact same way over and over and over again. So thank you for putting that together. And I'm curious, is that still one of the key initiatives at Candid as we move into 2026?
Yeah, so we call our vision Data 1x. It stands for Data One Time. And the idea is to create a world where nonprofits can share data about themselves just one time and it can be used by anybody who needs it. This is like sort of standard course of business in the private sector, right? When companies put out information, companies don't share different information in some bespoke way for every funder that they have, right? They have a standard set of information, there's prospectus, or their SEC filings or whatever, and people get that information and use it to make their decisions about whether to invest. On the other hand, on the nonprofit side, it's even worse than you described. It's not just having to fill out the same fields over and over again. It's that the fields are all different in slightly different ways. So you can't even use the same answers again. So compared to the for-profit companies, nonprofits spend an inordinate amount of time trying to transact with their funders, right? Both finding the funders, applying for funding, and reporting to their funders is like orders of magnitude more than what happens in the for-profit sector. And I think it really takes away from our ability to drive impact. So our desire is to make it much easier by standardizing that data. And just to give an example of what that looks like, our first sort of baby step towards this vision is an initiative we call Demographics via Candid. What we found was that in the wake of the racial reckoning in 2020, many foundations became very interested in understanding not just what they were funding, but who they were funding. They wanted to get demographics and data about the nonprofits they were funding. And it seemed like every foundation went out there and hired their own consultant who came up with their own demographic questions and categories. And then they fielded their surveys out to nonprofits so that nonprofits like Candid, we get about 100 of these surveys every year, which are all slightly different, right? So one is like, what is a race of your racial breakdown of your board? One has eight categories, one has 10 categories. You can't reuse the data again, right? So it's sort of ludicrous that then you have to resurvey people so you can slice and dice differently. And it's just a little microcosm of the types of challenges nonprofits face in just simply being able to share information that is very similar with a number of different funders.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really great example of how We can do a much better job of enabling nonprofits to standardize their data, provide it on their terms, right? And then those of us who are asking for that data can find ways to adapt to it. It's a great way also of like leveling the playing field and resetting that power imbalance. You know, for many, many years, I think funders have had the luxury being able to hire those consultants and come up with you know a way a very unique way of asking the question that serves their exact needs, but at the same time causes all of that rework and burden on nonprofit organizations. So there's been some other really like fun activities happening at Candid as well, right? So you guys have been like merging systems and databases. Tell me a little about what's going on there.
Well, it's very exciting that we're on the final sprint for integrating all of our legacy systems onto a new platform that we call Candid Search. And so this is taking our flagship products, GuideStar and Foundation Directory, and integrating them into a built from scratch next generation platform that both takes the best of what those products offers and adds in, refresh user interface that's much easier to navigate, as well as new features, some leveraging AI that will make it much easier to get answers to users. So we're super excited. It's already launched on candid.org. If people want to check it out, just go to the search box on candid.org, and we're still finalizing some elements of it before we take it out of beta and have a full launch.
Yeah, and big testimonial for me. I've been a user of this since the early days of when it began to get merged in a beta environment, and it is just so useful, so helpful. I do tons of research using various Candid products to, you know, understand sort of Submittable's customer base and really the nonprofit sector, and to try to like find insights into some of these issues of the day. And I think that the way that you're combining data and the user interface that Candid has developed just makes it so easy to find the data that is really useful and that I'm actually looking for. And, you know, I've tried many other tools out there, and at this point, like I am a fanboy. I'm totally sold on what you guys are doing.
Love it. Thank you so much for the testimonial, Sam. We're going to put you on the road.
Nice. I'm already on the road, so I'll carve out a few minutes to talk about Candid everywhere I go. Yeah, like what's going on in terms of the coming year? So we're almost to December 2025 when we're recording, and you know, what are you guys thinking about in terms of how things will evolve at your organization in terms of strategy or new initiatives?
So next year's going to be an exciting year. We're going to, beginning of the year, do the full launch of the new Candid platform. So that will be probably the biggest thing, although it'll be at the very beginning of the year. And we're excited that as we launch the new platform, that's going to unleash innovation across the organization, because we've really been focused the last few years on replatforming, going from our legacy systems to building up that functionality on this new platform. But now that we've done that, we really get to, set folks free to figure out what are the new problems we can solve with the latest technologies. And so I think teams are all super excited about that. On the nonprofit side, we're of course really focused on how do we save nonprofits time and relieve this burden on nonprofits. And so we're looking at ways that we can leapfrog ourselves in terms of leveraging the latest advancements to be able to save nonprofits dramatically more time in identifying and securing funding for their missions. On the funder side, we're really excited about one of the things that we've heard a lot from funders is the that in this current world where funding is shifting much more rapidly than it used to because of federal funding cuts and federal funding shifts, and then therefore foundations shifting what they're doing, people need to have visibility of what's happening so that they can make good decisions. They need to know what is getting funded, where the gaps, new gaps are now. And so we're going to be looking at how can we both provide better visualization tools for people to understand how funding is flowing within their areas or spheres of interest, if you will, whether that's geography or issue area or both, and have a strong campaign to really drive much fresher data. We already have much fresher data than 990s through the hundreds of foundations that we call e-report to us and share their grant data directly with us in advance of their 990s being published. And we really want to build on that so that we have a much more current view for folks on what's happening. So those are a couple of the product initiatives. We're also going to continue to play a really critical role in the with all of the crosswinds the sector is facing. You know, there's been a lot of attacks on both foundations and nonprofits, as well as the you know from a policy spec perspective, as well as from a funding perspective. And we've really been playing a role of providing the data, both to advocates, to the press, and publicly through dashboards and blog posts, to help people understand and be rooted in the facts of, you know, what might happen if, you know, if federal funding to nonprofits was cut. That would affect probably about 30% of nonprofits out there, and have a pretty significant impact. And when people say, oh, foundations can step in, for example, what we found is that it would take every single foundation increasing their payout by almost 300% in order to make up for the government funding. Government is just huge. And so we're just trying to publish data like that so that people understand the and can have some perspective on how the things that are happening or might happen, what the impact of those things might be.
So let's talk about that a little bit. So, like, there are things happening. It has been a really, really tough year in the nonprofit sector, an unprecedented year in so many ways. And, you know, whether it is, nonprofits, you know, seeing their funding cut, whether it has been sort of the politicization of many of the organizations, both on the funder side and the nonprofit side. In a lot of ways, I think it has caused, you know, in some ways, like, we're at a standstill, and people are reeling and trying to figure out, like, how to react to everything that's happening. In other ways, like, we're moving faster than we ever have. We're seeing organizations out there like MacArthur, you know, that are stepping up and really sort of, like, taking on the fight, committing more funding to help nonprofit organizations. Like, what is your take on what is the last, you know, 10 months or so been like?
It's been a whirlwind, honestly. I mean, I think it has been for all of us. I think we never know where the next what where the next shoe is going to drop, right? And so I think it's been pretty crazy for us and for everyone. You know, I think that uncertainty is hard because we just don't know what's going to happen, and lots of things have happened that we didn't expect. And I think lots more will happen that we haven't expected. So it's been a rough time, and I think one of the and everyone's been scrambling to try to figure out how to fill the gaps that keep being created. And so one of the good things that's come of that that I've been really excited about is just how well the sectors really come together. I think better than, you know, universities, law firms, and others who have come under attack, the social sector has really, you know, had each other's backs. You know, we're seeing organizations that used to squabble with each other constantly, like really, you know, join arms and you know, march forward together and really leverage each other's expertise. It's been really heartening to see. So it's great to see some of that kind of come together. I think the thing that, you know, you and I have talked about before that I'm concerned most about is that there's so much blocking and tackling that understandably we have to do because people's lives are being put at risk and organizations' futures are being put at risk. But there's so much blocking and tackling that I worry we're missing the bigger picture of kind of how we're gonna change the arc of things, because the reality is that we're not going back to the world that we came from, you know, whether we want it or not. But that I feel like there's a lot of effort to protect the status quo, because it's something we're familiar with. And I just think that that's going to be a losing battle. And we also need to put some effort into figuring out what's the new status quo we want to create, because most of us weren't happy with the status quo before this. And so I think as much as we might hate some of the changes that are happening, it's also an opportunity to create something better. And I'd love to see us all collectively put a little bit more energy into envisioning what is the world that we want to create out of this.
Do you feel like, you know, the leaders across the sector are thinking about how we collectively reinvent rather than try to rebuild or maintain that status quo? Like, do you feel like they're receptive to that idea that, like whether you want to or not, this is a time of reinvention for all of
Yeah.
us in the nonprofit sector. And, whether you want to or not, like we're not going to go back to the way that things were 2 or 3 years ago. And in a big way, to your point, we shouldn't want to go back to the way that things were 2 or 3 years ago. Like there was, that's why we have been talking about things like the inequity and the power
Yep.
imbalances and the burden imposed on nonprofit organizations and the lack of our ability to do a good job in figuring out if we're making an impact on systems. Like, so what do you think? Like, are we going to in some way take advantage of this as an opportunity to reinvent?
I hope so. I'm only just recently starting to see signs that people are thinking about this. Again, I think everyone's been blocking and tackling again for good reason. So I'm not, I totally have empathy and understanding for why we're doing the blocking and tackling, but I feel like we're just starting to see signs of people lifting their heads up and looking at towards the horizon of what we might do. And I hope that we can build on that and carve out enough space to really envision where we want to go, because I think that's the only way we'll be able to get there.
And like, where do we want to go? Like, where does Anne May want to go? If you could wave your wand and have us reinvent, the sector in a way that works better than it has in the past, what might that look like?
That's a good question. I think, one of the, I spent most of my career in Silicon Valley, and there's a lot of both good things and bad things about Silicon Valley. One of the good things about Silicon Valley was just the pace of progress, right? That things happened fast and improvements happened fast. And we need that pace of progress in the nonprofit sector. And I think there are systemic barriers to us being able to do that. Most prominently, the sort of funder-nonprofit relationship. There's a real power imbalance where funders hold all the strings, right? They hold the money, they get to dictate the terms. And I think that there's an opportunity as we rebuild the sector to think about how we can like rebalance that a bit. If I can just share briefly like how Silicon Valley works, like if you're a startup company and you have a great idea, you have a pitch deck, you go out and you sell a bunch of funders on the pitch deck, they decide to write a check, and then they basically give you some runway and leave you alone. And then at the end of the time, if you've been able to demonstrate you made good progress, then they cut you another check, right? And if you don't, then they go away, right? It's, that's a simple explanation of how funding or venture capital works. The good thing about this is that these startups don't have to spend a ton of time raising money or dealing with their funders. They can just go off and they have a lot of freedom to try to innovate. And they have the incentive to innovate because if they come up with something, that's where they get the big reward. So when we turn to the nonprofit sector, most typically when nonprofits get funding, they get it in the form of restrictive funding that in many cases can be down to the penny where money needs to be spent. And what that means is, both in a dynamic world and in a world where our solutions aren't good enough when we need to innovate, our arms are tied behind our back. We're spending all our time trying to plan ahead of time for what we're going to do for the next 3 to 5 years, which is just not foreseeable because who would have known what we needed to do this year 3 or 5 years ago, right? And then trying to stay slavishly adhere to that plan in order to please the funders. And I think that just holds that sort of fundamental relationship holds back so much opportunity for the nonprofit sector. And that's the thing I hope most to change. We're already seeing movements towards that with things like trust-based philanthropy that is really promoting the idea of general operating support or unrestricted funding, which is essentially how startups work, and reducing the burden of applications and reporting and all of that kind of stuff, so the nonprofits can do the work that they are set up to do.
I'd love that vision, and I hope it comes to fruition at some point. We saw during COVID days that many funders switched their operating model to provide more unrestricted funding to nonprofit organizations. And I think they were compelled to because they realized if they didn't, there were many nonprofits that were simply not going to survive. And so, the hand was forced and they did it. And then unfortunately, like now there's a lot of evidence that shows that many of those same funders have like gone back to the way that they always did it. And At best, maybe, 14% of a grant or whatever is unrestricted to pay for so-called overhead. And then the rest is really all about buying impact. And, to your point, like I agree completely. I hope that we do reach a point in time where more funders are willing to make those venture-like investments into nonprofits and their initiatives, and then take a big step back and let the nonprofits do what they do best. And, no doubt some of those will be successful, some of them will not, but it's a proven model that has worked in Silicon Valley. I'd like to see more opportunity for nonprofits in our sector have that as well.
I absolutely agree. We need to give nonprofits more flexibility. And one of the reasons for that, now, there's two reasons for it, internal and external. Like, internal is it allows nonprofits to take risks, to innovate, to experiment, where you don't know exactly what's going to happen next, right? And you just can't do that with highly restricted funding. The external piece is the world is changing faster and faster. You know, we had COVID, we had all the policy changes we're seeing this year, we have the extraordinarily fast pace of technology revolution with investments happening in AI right now. And so the notion that you can plan ahead and have like a detailed, plan that you can sign on with your funder and say, this is what I'm going to do, is just a fallacy more and more that that is meaningful. So I think that the external forces will hopefully, wake funders up to say, hey, we can't predict what the world's going to look like in 2 years.
I completely agree with you. I think that this is such a great opportunity to really rethink, like, the whole idea around what we expect out of nonprofit organizations when we fund them. What do you think has to change on the nonprofit side there as well? Do they need to do a better or a different type of job in terms of like showing their progress and what they're actually achieving over time once they receive that unrestricted funding? Or is it really just like, we'll come back in 3 years and tell you what happened?
Well, I don't think it should be 3 years. I'm a big fan that when it comes to innovation, it's really important to think big and start small, right? So, and I think nonprofits struggle with both of those things, largely because they've worked in a context where they weren't allowed to do either. And so, that gets seeped into the culture where, those muscles just atrophy, right? So the think big part is like, I just don't think we're ambitious enough. Nonprofits generally put forward things that are fairly well understood, that they generally understand how they're going to be able to achieve so that they can deliver what they're promising funders, right? It's a natural part of the bargain. So, of course, they don't swing big for things that they're not sure they can do. So learning how to think bigger and really come up with solutions that meet the size of the need and make the degree of impact that will fully achieve our missions is something I think we need to get better at. The other side of that, and this is to your 3 year point, is the starting small. We also, because of the way funders have trained nonprofits, are accustomed to having a 3 year plan and executing on one thing for 3 years, come hell or high water. But the reality if we're trying to innovate, we should take much smaller steps because what's important when you're innovating is how fast you can learn. So if you can run a 1 day experiment and learn something, or a 1 week experiment and learn something, and then that informs your next step, which may be in a different direction than you would have thought before, you can make much faster progress than if you have a 3 year plan and then come up for air in 3 years and see whether your thing worked. So I think that's a muscle that we're going to have to develop and a culture shift we're going to need to make in order to drive more innovation in the nonprofit sector.
Yeah, agile philanthropy.
Yes.
Nice. Before I let you go, Anne May, I have to ask your perspective on AI, of course. Like, I just got back from the TED conference, and many of the sessions, as you would expect, were focused on the use of artificial intelligence and grant making and philanthropy and impact measurement. How are you thinking about AI? How is Candid thinking about AI? I'd love to hear your perspective.
Can't have a conversation without talking about AI anymore, right?
That's right.
I mean, I like everyone, recognize the incredible power of AI and how it will likely transform our societies in ways that we can't anticipate, both for better and for worse. And I think we should all be in awe of that power. I do think that with any technology advancement, there's always a scramble to try to use that technology for something, right? It's the sexy new thing. And so I think there's a bit of this like hammer looking for a nail, like, use AI for this, that, or the other thing. And I think that's a little dangerous because it's just if you're just trying to find an application of AI, you're probably not solving a real problem. I'm a big fan of starting with the problem you're trying to solve and having the full suite of tools at your on your desk so that you can pull from the ones that will be most helpful to you. At Candid, AI is not a new thing, and I joke about how these days people are talking about this new thing called AI. I took my first AI course in college over 30 years ago. So to me, it's like been a long-standing thing. We've seen AI be used in, anything from Amazon recommending products to you to Netflix recommending movies to you. These have been around for a long time. The new sort of progress in AI has largely been around generative AI, and that has really taken the world by storm and exposed AI in a way that people can see, touch, and feel a little bit more directly than AI in the past. And I think it's really captured people's imaginations. But at Candid, we've had a machine learning team for over a decade. We've been using AI techniques in order to both be able to capture data, to be able to categorize that data, make sense of that data, clean the data, dedupe the data, and so forth. So we've been doing a lot of things with machine learning for a long time now. And we're starting to harness these new advancements in AI. We have a labs page, candid.org/labs, that has some of our early experiments with AI in our domain, where we have a chatbot to answer your questions about philanthropy and the social sector. We have recommendations of funders. We have a letter of intent generator. So we have a bunch of these kind of tools that we're sharing with the sector and experimenting with to figure out what's really going to be helpful to make a big difference in people's work.
Yeah, do you think that the data that Candid has like could ever play a role in developing a philanthropy-based large language model or
Oh,
perhaps at
absolutely.
least doing a better job of training what's already out there?
Absolutely. That's something we think about a lot. We are looking at some of those things ourselves on our end, and we're also looking at how we can provide data to others who are trying to do that. The real there's again, with any powerful technology, there's always upside and downside. So it holds the promise of making it much easier to access and get answers about this information. It also has the risk of that information being misconstrued or misused. And so we're really trying to be thoughtful about how we can get the data out there in a way that AI models will actually understand the nuances fully and be able to get the meaningful answers to people as a result.
You know, I've worked at a couple of big foundations, and as much as I wanted to promote data sharing from our own organization, like it felt like the conversation always got hung up with our legal counsel. Like, is that a thing? Like, or is that just my experience? Like, have you guys figured out the secret sauce to getting legal teams at foundations and nonprofit organizations to loosen the grip in terms of data sharing?
We already have numerous nonprofits and foundations that share data with us. So we may not be looking at quite as sensitive data because the data that we tend to capture is data that we make public. And so we're not talking about super sensitive data with PII or so forth that the lawyers might get more wrapped up in. But we have
Right.
our share of lawyers that we work with too.
And May, I knew that this conversation was going to absolutely fly by. And I've had such a great time hearing your incredible perspectives on so many different topics. So I guess thank you so much for joining me. And we'll continue our regular get-togethers and these conversations that we have. And can't wait to see you in person at a conference at some point in the spring.
Sounds good. It's always a pleasure, Sam. Thanks so much for having me on your show. And let's get together again soon.
Over the last few years, nonprofits have had to get accustomed to an incredibly swift pace of change. That doesn't seem to be letting up. The big question is, how do nonprofits dig in and do the day-to-day work, that blocking and tackling without losing sight of the bigger picture? A big part of the answer is in coming together and leaning on organizations like Candid. I'm glad they continue to be so committed to this work because we all benefit from it. That's all for me today. Thanks for tuning in to Impact Audio, produced by your friends at Submittable. Until next time.